Let's be real. French fries are the only good vegetable out there. But unfortunately, they're not a very healthy vegetable. Balance of Nature fruit and veggie capsules are the most convenient way to get your daily intake of fruits and vegetables. You know, like the kind of vegetables that actually count. Balance of Nature uses an advanced cold vacuum process that encapsulates fruits and vegetables into whole food supplements without sacrificing their natural antioxidants. The capsules are completely void of additives, fillers, extracts, synthetics, pesticides, or added sugar. The only thing in Balance of Nature's fruit and veggie capsules are fruits and veggies. You need nutrients to function at your best each and every day. Balance of Nature helps you do just that. Go to balanceofnature.com and use promo code WIRE to get 35% off your first fruits and veggie set and an additional $10 off every additional set you buy. That's balanceofnature.com, promo code WIRE.
Today on the Matt Walsh Show, the euthanasia industry is growing by leaps and bounds across the Western world, and the same drug companies that make antidepressants are manufacturing the suicide drugs to kill you. We'll talk about this extremely disturbing trend today. Also, a new study says that most gender-confused children do grow out of it as they reach adulthood, but we didn't need a study to tell us that. And Jimmy Kimmel declares that America is dirty and disgusting compared to a country like Japan. But why is that? That's the question that he doesn't want to ask or answer. We'll talk about all that and more today on the Matt Walsh Show. Does it make sense that the same company that controls half of online retail also passively eavesdrops on your private conversations at home? It's time to put a layer of protection between your online activity and these tech juggernauts, and that's why I use ExpressVPN. Think about how much of your life is on the internet already. Sadly, every site you visit, emails you send and receive, videos you watch, or messages you send get tracked and data mined. But when you run ExpressVPN on your device, the software hides your IP address so that big tech can't use it to identify you personally. ExpressVPN makes your activity harder to trace and sell to advertisers. ExpressVPN also encrypts 100% of your internet data to keep you safe from hackers and eavesdroppers on your network. What I like most about ExpressVPN is how easy it is to use. All you got to do is download the app on your phone or computer, tap one button, and you're protected. It's that simple. Stop handing over your personal data to the big tech monopoly that mines your activity and sells your information. Protect yourself with the VPN I trust to keep me safe online. Visit expressvpn.com/Walsh. That's expressvpn.com/Walsh to get 3 extra months free. Go to expressvpn.com/Walsh right now to learn more. About a year ago, you may recall, I covered the very sudden rise of euthanasia in Canada. As of 2022, the most recent year we have data available, euthanasia is now the 5th leading cause of death in Canada, accounting for 1 out of every 25 fatalities. That's ahead of common conditions like liver disease, influenza, diabetes, Alzheimer's. The number of so-called assisted deaths rose by more than 30% year over year, although precise metrics are getting hard to track. And that's because going forward, Canada says the euthanasia deaths won't be recorded as deaths caused by euthanasia. Instead, whatever reason the patient provided for seeking euthanasia will be recorded as the cause of that death. So if you have a doctor kill you because you have arthritis in Canada now, then that's going to be classified as a death due to arthritis. Now, this cover-up, like everything that has ever been attempted by the Canadian government, at least in recent years, has failed miserably. Euthanasia is such an obviously booming industry that funeral homes have started offering so-called turnkey bundles in which people can kill themselves and then have a burial all for one low, low price. And there's no need to have a terminal illness either. Some Canadians are killing themselves because they say it's easier to kill themselves than to get disability benefits. The Canadian state-owned media loves this. Of course, by the way, they claim that euthanasia can save millions in healthcare costs. This isn't just happening in Canada. All over the Western world, euthanasia is now more common than it's ever been. The number of British citizens who signed up for Dignitas, a Swiss nonprofit that performs euthanasia, increased by nearly 25% in just the year 2023. And in Switzerland, assisted deaths jumped by 11% last year alone. Meanwhile, in Belgium, assisted suicide increased by more than 15%. And overall, in Europe and Canada, euthanasia rates have increased by a quarter in just about 12 months. Over in South Australia, medical assistance in dying, as it's euphemistically called, was legalized a year ago, and the numbers of death permits they're issuing are increasing at a rate of around 20% per quarter. And those numbers are going to continue to rise, in part because the public broadcaster in Australia is running segments like this, promoting euthanasia. Watch.
Death in our society is really hard for people to get their heads around and to talk about it. It's still a taboo subject.
Are you right to come down to radiation oncology?
Few people would choose to follow in the footsteps of Canberra's palliative care health workers.
I really love what I do. I love palliative care. I love caring for people who just need that little bit extra. So it's a really honourable place to be in someone's life.
It's really teary. Really appreciate.
Oh. It is hard. There are times when it can be really difficult. But for the most part, to be able to see the difference you can make in someone's life.
Make a difference in someone's life today by killing them. Give them a little something extra. That's the pitch in Australia. And it's working. Now, as you expect, as euthanasia becomes more and more common all over the world, you know, we've heard a significant number of stories that are quite disturbing, to put it mildly. For example, there was the Canadian woman who was diagnosed with cancer, only to be told by her doctors that she should consider euthanasia as a treatment option, I suppose. And she refused that because she didn't want to kill herself. And she fled to the United States, where she paid hundreds of thousands of dollars to receive treatment. And those are the kinds of stories that make you realize that there are a lot of very sick people in countries like Canada who don't have a lot of money lying around. And because of that reason, for financial constraints, you know, they're killing themselves. And it's hard to imagine this trend getting any more bleak from there. But somehow it has gotten more bleak. There's an incredible new story in the Free Press about a 28-year-old woman in the Netherlands named Zoraya Ter Beek. And she plans to have a medical professional kill her sometime in May, so next month. And that's not because she has any kind of terminal illness. Remember, originally they said that euthanasia, it's only for people that have terminal illnesses. And we've long since left that behind as the slippery slope continues. And this woman, like so many other people that have elected euthanasia in countries across the world, has no terminal illness. Instead, she's been diagnosed with depression, autism, and borderline personality disorder. And on that basis alone, even though she's physically healthy, she lives in a nice house with her boyfriend and her cats, and you know, again, has no terminal illness at all, but because of that, she wants to die. And she'll be able to. And this woman appears to mean what she's saying. She's been highly visible in the Dutch press for many years, going as far back as 2017. And every time that she's appeared since then, she's been promoting the idea of euthanasia or dying in some way. For example, in 2017, a Dutch website profiled Zoraya, writing, quote, "Zoraya is 22 and does not want to be resuscitated if something happens to her." And of course, she gets comments about that. More and more people are deciding to wear a do not resuscitate badge. That same year, another Dutch outlet wrote an article about how Zoraya was planning her funeral for herself. Additionally, Zoraya has provided the Free Press with a photograph of the coffin she plans to use, including a picture of herself in the coffin. She also posted extensively about her plans on social media. And confronted with all this, Zoraya's psychiatrist, they didn't suggest any alternative. Instead, they told her that she was doomed, basically. Quote, "Zoraya recalled her psychiatrist telling her they had tried everything, that there's nothing more we can do for you. It's never going to get any better." Now, it's hard to sum up the agenda of the pharmaceutical companies and the medical industry any better than that one line. There's nothing more we can do for you. It's never going to get any better. Now, I'm sure that that is a paraphrase from Zoraya, paraphrasing what her psychiatrist have, you know, if we're to have any faith in her psychiatrist, maybe we could at least, if we're going to give them any benefit of the doubt, maybe we could at least hope that they didn't say that directly and explicitly. You're never going to get better. You should kill yourself. But we can also be pretty confident that it's an accurate paraphrase. And on that, even as a paraphrase, it is obviously horrifying. I mean, this is a woman who's not even 30 years old and has no physical illness whatsoever. Every single problem she has is in her head. You know, in her head and very vaguely defined on top of it. Like a term like borderline personality disorder, it's one we're accustomed to hearing. We hear about it all the time, and many people have been diagnosed with it. But very rarely does anyone stop to ask any fundamental questions about that diagnosis. Questions like, how exactly can you diagnose a personality as disordered? Well, because that implies that you have some idea of what a properly ordered personality is. So what is a properly ordered personality? What personality is this woman supposed to have? When the psychiatrist looked at her and said, no, that's the wrong. Your personality is not supposed to be like this. It's disordered. Okay, well, so what was Zoraya's personality supposed to be? Can you tell us that? Well, not only are they saying that she has the wrong personality, but that she should kill herself because of it. Because never mind, I guess. Whatever these disorders are, however you define them, even if you can't really define them, her doctors have prescribed suicide to cure them. Because this is what happens now if the antidepressant drugs don't work. Now they have another drug to sort of permanently fix the problem. And conveniently, the same companies that are selling the antidepressants are also making the drugs that help kill people who realize the antidepressants don't work too well. A company called Valiant Pharmaceuticals, now known as Bausch Health, makes the most commonly used drug in physician-assisted suicide called Seconal. And as it happens, that same company also makes Wellbutrin, which is the 18th most prescribed medicine in the United States with millions of prescriptions. And when it came out, it was billed as a kind of a second line, heavy hitting antidepressant that's supposed to work where the first line SSRIs fail. Okay, so that company that makes the antidepressant also makes the suicide drug. I mean, just stop and think about that for a second and what that means. And what that means is that in the event that the second line antidepressant fails, well, now we have the third line. They'll just kill you. Which also means that the company that is profiting off of suicide is also claiming to treat depression. Like, the conflict of interest here should be so obvious that we shouldn't need to spell it out. And it should disturb most people, but it doesn't, at least not everywhere. One of the most revealing aspects of this free press article has been the reaction to it. In the Netherlands, there was outrage. Not at the medical industry, you know, that's killing depressed people and telling them that they're hopeless and they should commit suicide, but rather at the free press for covering the story. Zoraya shut down her social media accounts, claiming the free press article misrepresented her without explaining how. And a lot of her supporters in the Netherlands were also furious with the piece, saying that it was a distorted view of what they call medical assistance in dying. But, and there's really no way to distort, by the way, there's no way to distort. It's suicide. It's a doctor poisoning you and killing you. That's what it is. And it's the kind of thing that any honest conversation about it is going to make it sound horrifying, because that's what it is. You're killing people. And killing people is a horrifying thing to do. But in America, the reaction was a little different. Instead of writing puff pieces about Zoraya's decision, many mainstream outlets presented it accurately as a horrifying crime against humanity and a betrayal of the most basic principle of medicine. Here's how the author of the Free Press, Rupa Subramania, put it last night, quote, "I've been struck by the reaction so far, some of which I anticipated. North Americans generally tend to be horrified at the Dutch acceptance of the right to die, even for someone who is not terminally ill, or their acceptance that there should be a more humane way to commit suicide, even when euthanasia is legal. The Dutch I spoke to find North Americans very conservative and religious when it comes to life and death. The Netherlands is a post-religious society, and the comments from there are 180 degrees from what I'm getting from people in North America. We're living in two different epistemic worlds at the same point in time, in cultures that descend from fundamentally the same Western roots coming from the Renaissance, the Enlightenment, and the Protestant Reformation. There's overwhelming support for euthanasia, assisted dying, and a humane way to commit suicide in the Netherlands than anywhere else in the Western world." Now, what this tells us is that the contagion that has now completely overtaken Europe, and in particular countries like the Netherlands and also Canada, may be reversible in this country. It may not have completely taken hold here. And there are other signs of that as well. For example, late last year, the American Medical Association's House of Delegates considered a resolution that would have officially endorsed the practice of euthanasia. And given the extent of the barbaric medical practices that the AMA endorses already, it seemed likely that this resolution would pass. But as the National Catholic Register reports, quote, "The House of Delegates of the American Medical Association rebuffed an effort to change the organization's current stance in opposition to physician-assisted suicide, a development that drew praise from members of the Catholic Medical Association, which advocated against the change. So that's a victory, obviously. Again, kind of a surprising one, considering the barbarism that these people already endorse. But the fact that this resolution was even proposed, was ever seriously considered, tells us that we're not very far removed from the Netherlands. It suggests that unless the underlying causes of this trend are resolved, it will eventually overtake this country as well. And the underlying causes, the reason young people are killing themselves, is that hope, you know, which comes from a sense of purpose, are becoming rare in modern society. That's true both here and in Europe. And now that euthanasia offers a seemingly easy and quote-unquote painless way out, more and more people at younger and younger ages are taking advantage of what they see as an easy way out. They'll be put on antidepressants that don't work and then suicide drugs after that, sort of to clean things up afterwards. And somehow the drug companies will suggest that even though they've sold SSRIs that accomplish nothing, you should still trust them when they say that their euthanasia drug is the solution. This is a pitch that only works when people have been lied to for years and become profoundly confused about this basic fact, which is that life is not easy. Nobody is happy all the time. But we are alive for a reason. And if we feel like life is meaningless, it's not because life actually has no meaning. The problem is that we struggle to see it. Everyone goes through moments like that in life. The solution for those people, people like Zariah and others, is to help those people see the meaning in life. Well, pharma companies like Bosch Health are not providing that solution. I mean, they aren't even trying to help people in their despair. They're only trying to profit off of it. Now let's get to our five headlines. It's 2024, and if you're still spending your money with woke companies, you got to stop that. There are a lot of great companies out there that aren't shoving diversity and inclusion initiatives down the throats of their employees or their customers. Maybe you're already doing business with some of these. That's great. Maybe you're boycotting companies who have made headlines by acquiring the latest trans influencer as their spokesperson. Even better. But have you given much thought to where your money is currently invested? A lot of big wealth management companies make billions of dollars investing your money however they want, wherever they want, even if that means investing in businesses who don't care about your values. Well, you can align your portfolio with your principles today with my friends at Constitution Wealth. Constitution Wealth is the Patriot's choice in wealth management. They'll help you build a solid investment plan while reducing your investments in the ESGs and DEIs, companies that care more about global warming and diversity ratios than they do your return on investment. So fight the culture war with your most valuable weapon, your investments. Help build the parallel economy by working with an investment firm composed of professionals who are patriots like you. If you have $250,000 or more of stock and bond investments and would like to reduce your exposure to woke companies, go to constitutionwealth.com/Matt. That's constitutionwealth.com/Matt. We begin with a big report in the Daily Mail. It says the majority of gender-confused children grow out of the feeling by the time they are fully grown adults, according to a long-term study. Researchers in the Netherlands tracked more than 2,700 children from age 11 to their mid-20s, asking them every 3 years of feelings about their gender. Results showed at the start of the research, around 1 in 10 children, 11%, expressed gender non-contentedness to varying degrees. But by age 25, just 1 in 25, or 4%, said they often or sometimes were discontent with their gender. The researchers concluded, quote, "The results of the current study might help adolescents to realize that it is normal to have some doubts about one's identity and one's gender identity during this age period, that this is also relatively common. It comes amid a massive boom in transgender children receiving drugs to change their gender in the U.S. As critics say, doctors and parents are not challenging young people enough." Patrick Brown, a fellow at the Conservative Ethics and Public Policy Center, who was not involved in the research, told DailyMail.com, quote, "This study provides even more reason to be skeptical towards aggressive steps to facilitate gender transition in childhood and adolescence." Reason to be skeptical. That's the very nice and generous way of putting it. Really, it's reason to reject the butchery of children entirely. And we had all the reason we needed before it, before this study came out. Because, of course, the first reaction you have to a study like this when you hear about the results is like, of course. Of course. Of course they grow out of it. Any rational adult already knew that. And as I've been saying now for years, this is something that we intuitively know. We know from any adult who has experience raising children or being around kids or teaching kids, like, you know that from that experience. That's something you know about children. But you also know, because if you were a child at one time, which we all were, if we're adults now, you know, from your own experience of being a child, whether you experienced quote unquote gender non-contentedness or not, you know that that it is very common for children to go through phases where they say they want something, where they feel not content with something, and then they grow out of it. It's a very common thing. And we all always knew that. We didn't need any studies. And the problem is that there was that our ability to confirm this obvious fact with studies has been very limited by the fact that we have not been doing this horrible thing to children for very long. Right? This is a new phenomenon where we start trans ideology in general, but especially the way that it's imposed on children, and in particular at this scale, is something that just started happening in the last 10 years and has really ramped up over the last, I'd say, 5 years. And when it first started, when the trans ideologues first started really going after the children, and they said, oh, we need to start transitioning children. And we said, no, that's insane. Don't do that. And what was their response? Well, where's your studies? Where's your studies proving that this is harmful? Where's your studies proving that it's harmful to chemically castrate children? Well, again, you don't need a study to prove something that any rational, even vaguely morally decent adult already knows. But also, how can we have studies about it? You just started doing this. Studies of who exactly? Well, now that this has been going on for a while, it's only really just now that we can start to see the real credible long-term studies. Because against the objections of some of us, of many of us, but not enough of us, they proceeded anyway and used a generation of children like lab rats. The gender ideologues did. And now we're starting to see these the results of these lab experiments. And all of the results, every single result, vindicates everything that those of us on Team Sanity have been saying all along. Because of course it does. Now, what's going to be the spin from the trans activists? Well, here's one. I think this is basically going to be it. This kind of sums it up. This is from Ari Drennan, who's a male who identifies as a female, works for Media Matters, trans activist. Ari Drennan responding to this study, and here's what he says. Number one, this is why clinicians provide gender-affirming care to minor patients who are insistent, consistent, and persistent. Number two, let's all agree that there are some subset of people unhappy with their gender who don't grow out of it. What if we treated them like human beings? Well, just to that second point, yeah, we should treat everybody like human beings, which means we don't chemically castrate anyone. Unless we're talking about adult sex offenders, and we're doing it as a punishment in a way of protecting children. Well, yeah, in that case, sure. Which, as you know, it just so happens that the drugs that are used to chemically castrate sex offenders are also used on kids now. But aside from that group of like sex predators, the way that you treat people like human beings, particularly children, is by not butchering them, by not castrating them, by not sterilizing them. But also notice something else too on the second point. We'll get to his first point in a second. Notice something too on the second point. He says, let's all agree that there are some subset of people unhappy with their gender who don't grow out of it. Now, Notice the phrase unhappy with their gender. Like that alone, I mean, even putting aside how most of the rest of this is just totally false, but that alone is a shift in the goalposts that you should notice. And I want you to notice this as this happens now with the Trans Act. They're shifting the goalposts. Because what do they say up until now? They said that, no, these people, whether kids or adults who want to change gender, you know, a male identifies as a female, it's because that male really is a female. You know, it's in, and they can never explain how, but in some kind of mysterious spiritual way, the 13-year-old boy who says that he's a girl really is a girl. And so he's expressing, right, his inner identity. That was the claim. But now what they're saying is that, well, yeah, a trans person is, you know, a quote-unquote trans woman is not a man who really is a woman, but rather a man who is unhappy with being a man. But do you see how that's actually a different claim? That is a different claim. It's a claim that gets a little closer to the truth. You know, that many of these trans-identified people, it's like we think of them as confused, and when it comes to children, they actually are confused, but in particular with the adults. You look, for example, at grown men who, quote-unquote, transition later in life, the Rachel Levines of the world. And we often talk about them like they're confused, but you know, they actually aren't, most of them. They don't think they really are women. They just wish that they were women, which again is a different thing. Now, in both cases, you're not a woman, and that's all that really matters. But now you have the trans activists sort of admitting that, oh, no, well, this isn't a reflection of any deep, like, reality of the person. It's just their desire. And if you're admitting that it's a desire, then that's all the more reason why we don't treat it like a medical phenomenon. We don't treat it as something to be addressed with medicine. But let's go to the first point. This is why clinicians provide gender-affirming care to minor patients who are insistent, consistent, and persistent. So that's going to be what they say, that, and this is going to be the response. Well, yeah, of course there are kids who grow out of who say something and they grow out of it, but. But, you know, we very carefully weed those kids out because we only provide this quote unquote care to kids who are insistent, consistent, and persistent. And of course, the first problem there is, well, how do you define that? What do you mean insistent, consistent, and persistent? Acting like that has some really clear delineated definition where the lines of what is persistent versus not is a very, very clear line there. Now, it's entirely subjective, obviously. But also, to the extent that we can objectively define this concept of being insistent and persistent and consistent, well, children very often say they want things persistently and insistently, but then grow up and don't want it anymore. That's a very common thing. The phases of childhood can last many months, they can last years. You can have a child who goes through a phase, a persistent, consistent, insistent phase, which, by the way, kids are insistent about anything. So whatever a kid says, whatever they want in any given moment, they're going to be insistent about it. That's how kids are. So that we just leave that aside. That's a reflection of the fact that they're kids. But consistent and persistent, well, a kid can go through a phase that lasts a long time. And then they become adults. And the phase is over. And they'll look back on that phase with a mixture of amusement and embarrassment. Now, unless they happen to be in this unfortunate category where the medical industry has come in and exploited that phase and destroyed their bodies, and now they're going to look back on it, not with embarrassment. Now, there might be embarrassment, but it's going to be much more, certainly there will be no amusement anymore. This is a very common thing for kids. I mean, just to give you one example, and any parent can look at any of their kids and come up with dozens of examples of this. give you one example. My son, 10 years old, has insisted for years now, insisted that when he grows up, he wants to go and live in the woods. He wants to build a log cabin and live in the woods and have no electricity. He wants to live like it's the 1700s, and he wants to hunt game and have a little garden and just live in the woods like Daniel Boone. He wants to be Daniel Boone, basically, is what he wants to do. And he's been saying this for years. I mean, at least since he was 6 years old. He's been saying this is any the first moment we started having conversations with my son about, well, what do you want to be when you grow up? This has been his answer. And it has not changed, right? Now, this is a different kind of thing, because that desire of his to like want to go live in the woods and hunt animals, that's actually healthy and good. So it's not like a young boy saying he wants to be a girl. That's a sign that something's going wrong here. That is a sign of confusion and possibly other things as well. But in my case, with my son, it's a perfectly normal, healthy thing for a boy to want. If he becomes an adult and he really goes and pursues that, fantastic. It's a hard life, you know, it's you might not be able to maintain it for very long. But if you're a young man and you're single and you want to go try that, absolutely, I would fully support it. But my point is that the fact that he's been insisting on this, you know, for years as a 10-year-old, does that mean that by the time he's an adult, he's still going to want to go do that? Maybe. And again, in this case, if he wants to, then great. Because this is actually a healthy thing. But that doesn't mean that at all. I mean, I know as the adult that, and I'm supportive of it when he talks about it, it's fine. But we could easily fast forward to 12 years, he's 22 years old. He could be working somewhere where he wears a suit every day and he goes and works in the city. I mean, it's possible. Just because he's saying it now doesn't mean that he's going to want that when he's an adult. I know that. Because this is how the phases of childhood works, and they can last for a long time. So to extend the analogy, like, what if there was some magical switch that I could flip right now to lock him into that? I mean, he's been insistent about it. He wants to be Daniel Boone when he grows up. So what if I could switch a flip and it's like, okay, that's what you're going to do. That's it. All other options are gone, and that is who you're going to be. That's what you're going to do when you grow up. Would I flip that switch at 10 years old? Of course not. Would I even do something less committal than that? Would I go and like, okay, well, let's go buy the plot of land in the woods. Let's dig a well. Pay now to dig the well because you'll at least need that. Would I do that now? Of course not. He's 10 years old. And this is a reality of kids that, again, any rational person understands. And the thing you have to understand is that the people who are pushing this, they, even though we go through great lengths to explain all of these facts, the people pushing it already, they know it too. They well understand how kids are, that they go through phases, that they don't know what they want, that they have underdeveloped brains. I mean, this is not just an anecdotal, this is a neurological reality, that kids have underdeveloped brains. They do not have the capacity to make long-term decisions. They just can't. Which is why, as an adult, you can look back at yourself as a kid and some of the things that you did and said and some of the ways that you acted. And you look back on it, it's like you're looking back at the life of some other person. You don't even, it's like, what the hell was I thinking? Well, it's like, well, you were thinking, but you were thinking with a brain that wasn't fully developed. That's why it feels alien even to you, and that was you as a person. The people pushing this, they know all of that. In fact, they know it all too well. Which is all the more reason why they want to get these kids on drugs as early as possible, to trap them in this false identity. They know that the kids will grow out of it, and that is why they want to get them on the drugs, so that they can't. All right, this is from NBC Miami. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis has signed a bill that will allow squatters in the state to be immediately evicted. DeSantis signed the bill HB 621 during a news conference Wednesday in Orlando, promising that Florida is ending the squatter scam. Before the bill, squatters were considered to be tenants and a process was required to evict them, but now this bill strips squatters of those rights. Lawmakers overwhelmingly passed the bill, which allows law enforcement to immediately remove squatters who don't have a lease authorized by the owner of the property. And here is Governor DeSantis talking about this bill.
But all the more reason why what we did last week to make sure we're not going to allow these squatters to commandeer private property is really important. Because you do have people that will live here 7-8 months of the year. Maybe they go to Maine or New York or even Canada. We got a lot of Canucks that come down here and own property. So you're gone for the whole summer. And again, this isn't most Floridians, but there we probably have more in our state that do that than just about any other state. You go, and then you come back 4 months later, and someone sets up shop in your house, and then they're asserting rights against you. And then in some of these states, the property owner is the one that actually gets arrested when there's a confrontation. That's absurd. You don't have a right to squat in somebody's property. And so if you try to squat in the state of Florida, the homeowner has a very quick remedy. You call the sheriff, and you guys will have a sheriff soon here in this county. You call the sheriff. They send people and they evict the squatters from your residence. That's the way it should be. That's how private property rights work.
The thing I love about this and so much of what DeSantis does is, first of all, he proves that the solutions, in fact, to most of these problems are very simple. There's so many problems we have in society that we're told, you know, the those in charge, the powers that be, the elites will tell us that, well, there's no simple solution. We're kind of stuck with this. There's nothing we can really do about it. You might think there's a solution, but there really isn't. And there are so many other, whatever you try to do, there's so many side effects of that we're stuck with this. We can't do anything about it. When you have an effective leader like DeSantis come along, he proves that, oh no, it's actually a simple solution. It's easy to prove that someone is squatting in your residence and they don't belong there. Very easy to prove. And if you can prove it, then you just have them kicked out. That's it. You have law enforcement comes. They got to break down the door. And then the squatter should have to pay for it, whatever damage is done. And you just drag them out. That's it. We don't need to sit around talking about, well, what do we do? There's someone in this house and they want to be in the house, but they don't belong there. What do we do about that? I don't know what to do. You drag them out and you bring them to jail. That's the solution. It's so simple. And any claim that it's not as simple as that is belied by someone like DeSantis, who says, okay, well, this is what we're going to do. There you go. No more squatting. Not a problem anymore. And that's the great thing about Ron DeSantis and why we need many more Republican leaders like him, where there's a problem. This is the way. It shouldn't be shocking to have a Republican governor that does this. That a Republican governor that sees there's a problem and says, we'll solve that. We'll pass a law, and laws do matter. You can actually fix a lot of problems with a law. Okay, you can't fix every problem with a law, and you can't fix any problem absolutely perfectly. But it could go a long way. So imagine that, having laws and then enforcing those laws with the people that you pay to enforce laws, law enforcement. Wow, it's like it really works. Which is more evidence that decline is a choice, and that the kind of lawless anarchy that you see in many places of the country is a choice. Doesn't have to be that way. And so at least Ron DeSantis identifies the problem and solves it. But that is just not something that enough conservatives value. I think that normal people, whether they identify as conservatives or not, who are just like living their lives, they value it, of course. They value a leader who sees problems and tries to fix it and is always working to like make your life, they want to make your life better. Okay, our political leaders, it's not their, they're not the primary ones in charge of making your life better. You have to take charge of that yourself, but that should be their overarching goal. And I think normal people appreciate that. But in particular, I guess I would say the kind of commentariat, the conservative commentariat, the pundits and so on, don't value it enough, are not nearly as impressed as they should be by conservative leaders who actually accomplish things. And why is that? I think one of it is that it's not as interesting. The solution to the problem is not as interesting as the problem. There's not as much to talk about. And I think for a lot of conservatives, they honest to God, they'd rather have the problem to complain about than the solution. And that alone explains some of the negative reception or the kind of lukewarm or indifferent reception that DeSantis has received. All right, this is one other thing I want to play for you. This video has gone somewhat viral. This is a lesbian woman talking about how she regrets fighting for gay rights because of how far it's been taken. And we've heard, you know, we've heard this sentiment expressed more and more recently from people like this. But I think this is the most sort of direct expression of it. Seems to have resonated with a lot of people. Let's watch it.
I don't understand what is so hard about correcting other people.
I'm so sorry I fought for gay rights. I'm so sorry for all the pain and suffering I went through. And had I known y'all were going to take it this far, I wish I could go back in time and not fight for gay rights and just live a nice, quiet, silent life on my own. We thought that's what we were fighting for, was just nice, quiet, fitting in, being just like everyone else. But I didn't know y'all were going to take it this far. I mean, wish I would have never done it.
Okay, so this message I appreciate because she's actually saying she's sorry she did it. It was a mistake. And so there's a certain awareness there, apparently a certain self-awareness that I can appreciate. But there's still a couple of points here, which is that, and this is not to rub it into this woman, you know, specifically, because she's already said, you know, it's like, this is a mistake. Okay. So general comments about that. One thing is that this was entirely foreseeable. Okay, so it's not like this did not come out of left field. The fact that we went from the gay rights movement to the trans agenda and 57,000 genders and pronouns and castrating children, like all of that. So what we can't allow is for people now to pretend like, well, this is as if things veered off course, as if this was the sort of the gay rights movement veering off course in a very sudden, unpredictable, unforeseeable way. That's not what happened. This was always the destination. Okay, that's the point of the slippery slope, is that the slippery slope is not a fallacy. I mean, you can fallaciously describe something as a slippery slope when it isn't, but there are slippery slopes. And the whole point of a slippery slope is it's a simple observation that one thing leads to another. And so there are some of us, you know, we listen to the left, they make an argument, they say, well, we want this. This is what we want right now. This is the right that we're claiming. And here's the reason why we want this. Here's our argument for this. Well, there are some of us who look at that and we say, well, okay, here's the principle that you're claiming. Here's the argument you're making. And well, geez, I mean, that argument, if that argument justifies A, you know, A is what you're going for, well, but that same argument, if it's true, would also justify B, C, D, E, and F. And so if we give you A, if we accept A, then we have already accepted B, C, D, and E, and F, because we've accepted the argument. That's the whole point of a slippery slope. That's anytime someone correctly points out a slippery slope, that is what they're saying. And so this was all totally foreseeable, not out of left field. This was the track that we were on. Which is why, again, this is not gloating, I told you so, but some of us did tell you so. We just did. And we were ignored. And I think that is an important observation to make. Because the one thing, you know, we've heard so many versions of that video. Someone who's formerly in the gay rights movement, someone who's sort of on the left, someone who's more like Bill Maher's camp or whatever, and they're looking at things like the trans agenda, and they're saying, this is too far. And then they get applauded by people on the right. But the one thing I think we never hear from those people, whether it's this woman or Bill Maher or anybody in that whole world, we never hear them say, well, you know what? Turns out that the social conservatives, who I absolutely smeared for years and defamed and accused them of being bigots and hateful, I said the worst things about them. I tried to shut them down. I tried to shut them up. I wanted them to be kicked off of social media. I mean, it turns out those people were actually right about this. I should have listened to those people. They apparently were not just like drooling moron bigots. They actually understood. They had an insight that I didn't have. So, you know, that's the next part that I've never heard any of these people say. But that part is really important. Not because it makes those of us who are right about it feel good. That's not the point. It just, one of the important reasons why it's important to acknowledge that is that, you know, we are making the same kinds of points now about other things the left is doing. And we're saying, well, look, this is where this is going to lead. And we've been right every step of the way. Every time. The social conservatives have been right about everything. For as long as the term social conservative has been used, they have been right about everything. Back before I was born. And so just once, I'd love to hear one of these people acknowledge that. Sort of on this same note, I also wanted to mention this. Ollie London tweeted this. Transgender runner Cece Telfer displaced a female athlete during the finals of the Women's Invitational 60-meter hurdles in Boston earlier this year. During the race, he qualified for the final of the event, finishing fifth in the preliminary events, but went on to disqualify himself during the deciding race. Telfer, who was 6'2", previously competed as a man, became the first trans athlete to win an NCAA title back in 2019. Okay, so, and yes, Cece Telfer, you've probably heard that name has been in the news for years now because this guy has been stealing titles and medals from women since high school. But the point is that Caitlyn Jenner responded to that tweet. This is what Caitlyn Jenner said. This is so wrong. How can we allow this to continue? How can men and women, mothers and fathers, stand idly by and allow this to happen to their daughters? We the people are fed up. We cannot vote for people, Dems, that want this insanity to persist. Girls are getting hurt. So Caitlyn Jenner is the perfect example of what I was just talking about. This is like the principal offender. And Jenner is often... Because Jenner calls himself a Republican and supports Trump, he's amplified by other conservatives who like to point to Caitlyn Jenner and say, oh, look, there's a trans person who's on our side. But once again, like some of the stuff that Jenner is saying now is correct. I mean, everything in this tweet here is true. No self-awareness, though. No acknowledgement of his own faults. Nothing. No apology, nothing. And it's like conservatives are going to let him get away with that. Caitlyn Jenner, you have to understand about Jenner, okay? There is probably no single human being on this earth alive today who did more to mainstream trans ideology than Jenner. No other single human being. He has done more than any other living person to make this insanity mainstream. And now, in the last couple of years, he's tried to rebrand as one of the rational ones without ever acknowledging that. We're all supposed to pretend like it didn't happen. And I'm sorry. I don't want to hear it from you until you give back your Woman of the Year award, you repudiate it, you apologize for all of the... I mean, this is not one of the like performative public apologies you call for. This is like you have harmed society in unspeakable ways. You specifically have done this and have never once even acknowledged that. Now, I believe in forgiveness, but how can you forgive something when there's no acknowledgement, there's no repentance, there's no apology, nothing? There's no forgiveness there. I can't forgive that. I don't forgive it. Nobody should. But it's also important because, Caitlin, you say that this is insane. Why is it insane? Why is it insane to let CeCe Telfer race against women? What makes it insane? There's only one thing that makes it insane. The only thing that makes it insane is that he is not a woman. If he was a woman, if trans women are women, then it's not crazy. It's not crazy for him to race against women. Of course, if he's a woman, even if he's 6 foot, 2 inches tall, if he's actually a woman, then he should compete against women. Who else would he compete against? The only thing that makes it crazy is that he's not a woman. So are you, Caitlyn Jenner, saying that trans women are not women? Is that what you are saying? Is that what you are saying? Are you saying that you yourself are not a woman? Is that it? Because if you're not saying that, then your criticism of this makes no sense. If you are saying about yourself, hey, I'm not really a woman, I was wrong about this, well, then say that. Now, that would be powerful. It's not going to undo the enormous, unspeakable damage you have done to society. Nothing will ever undo that. You'll take that to your grave. But it would be something. Yet he hasn't done that because he's an absolute coward. And we shouldn't let him get away with that. You know what the real March Madness is? It's the struggle to find quality, affordable American meat at the grocery store. That's why I get my meat delivered right to my door from Good Ranchers. Good Ranchers brings up 100% American beef, chicken, pork, and wild-caught seafood right to your door so you can avoid the grocery store altogether. Stop settling for low-quality, overpriced cuts in those gross styrofoam packages. Subscribe to America's number one meat delivery service at goodranchers.com, where you can be confident in the quality and affordability of every cut. Right now, during their March Meatness event, Good Ranchers is offering you free jumbo chicken wings for a year with any subscription. That's right, you get 2 pounds of free wings in each box when you subscribe today. Every piece of their chicken comes from an NAE program that guarantees it's never been given antibiotics or added hormones. Claim your $150 value of free wings plus an additional $20 off with code Walsh at goodranchers.com today. That's goodranchers.com with promo code Walsh to enjoy March Meatness savings. Good Ranchers, American meat delivered. Well, you know, it's no secret that my list of personal and professional accomplishments are both expansive and they strike envy in the hearts of everyone. Theocratic fascist, hit podcast host, best-selling children's author, acclaimed actor, Virginia resident, let's not forget. But the truth is, all of these things were mere stepping stones on the road to my true calling. In my new series, Judged by Matt Walsh, premiering April 9th on Daily Wire Plus, real plaintiffs will stand before me with real cases. Would a jury of peers be less painful for these petty claims? Absolutely. Would it maybe be smarter for them to go to a court like that? Probably. Would it be as entertaining for us? Absolutely not. So take a look at the official trailer for my new series, Judged by Matt Walsh, now. Check it out.
All rise for the Honorable Judge Walsh.
Please be seated. Ms. Goldstein. Mr. Bentley. Mr. Outerbridge. Ms. Spicer.
Your Honor.
Mr. Barney.
Yes, Your Honor.
Ms. Singh.
Yeah. At 30,000 feet, my lips exploded.
Why would I pay rent to somebody who had sex with my sister?
A dog bit my finger.
He's allergic, like the grass.
If he didn't want me to drive the car, he would have took the key. I had it with him.
Has anyone told you you're the worst negotiator that's ever lived?
I've never been more annoyed than I am in this moment.
Not even close.
That does it. Please get the hell out of my courtroom.
Well, if you thought our current court system was a joke, wait until you experience real petty court, where anything you say can and certainly will be held against you. Judged by Matt Walsh premieres Tuesday, April 9th at 8 p.m. Eastern on Daily Wire Plus. If you don't have a Daily Wire Plus membership, get it now for 35% off with code JUDGED at checkout. Go to dailywire.com/subscribe. I didn't pass the bar, but I'm here to lower it. That's a good one. I like that. Now let's get to our daily cancellation. Well, with all due respect to Stephen Colbert, who many would argue should lay claim to this title, Jimmy Kimmel is still the least funny late-night comedy host in the history of television. At least Colbert appears to be attempting comedy most of the time. He tells things that resemble jokes. You know, there's a setup followed by what we can deduce is probably meant to be a punchline. But Kimmel doesn't even do that. His jokes aren't only unfunny, they don't even resemble jokes in the first place. Case in point, this week Kimmel has gotten some attention online for a monologue where he complains bitterly about his own country and says that Japan is better. And once again, it's not clear where the jokes are supposed to be in this diatribe. Listen.
I took my family to Japan this week, and I have to say, I'm still not sure how I feel about what happened over there. You know, here in America, we know we have our faults. We know we have areas for improvement. But overall, I think most of us believe that compared to the rest of the world, we're pretty buttoned up. I know I did. I go to Europe, and there are dirt holes where plumbing is supposed to be, and I hold my breath, and I go, I'm glad I'm not one of these people. And then I go back home, right? But now, after traveling to Japan, I realize that this place, this USA we're always chanting about, is a filthy and disgusting country. We were in Japan for 7 days. Not only did I not encounter a single dirty bathroom, the bathrooms in Tokyo and Kyoto are cleaner than our operating rooms here. Everywhere you go, the bathrooms are clean, they don't smell bad, they have those toilets that wash you from the inside out. And not just in a hotel, restaurants, bars, truck stops. I went to 2 truck stops. I swear to God, the bathroom's cleaner than Jennifer Garner's teeth. The cleanest, beautiful. And it's not just the bathroom, there's no litter, people carry their own trash. There are no garbage cans in Tokyo. 30 years ago, some terrorists put some poisonous gas in some trash cans. They're like, okay, no more trash cans. Everybody clean up after yourselves. And guess what? They clean up after themselves. They bring their garbage to their houses. And it's like the whole country is Disneyland, and we're living at Six Flags. I've been home 36 hours. I've never felt dirtier. We are like hogs compared to the Japanese. I can't imagine what they must think of us. The garbage people. Yes, the Americans. Garbage, yes.
So it's a good thing that there's a sign in the room telling people to laugh, because otherwise they wouldn't have had any idea where the jokes were and where one joke ends and another begins. But leaving aside the general unfunniness of his rant, there are 3 other issues that I have with this. And the first is that Kimmel, as someone who lives in Los Angeles, says that America is a filthy and disgusting country, but that's like someone sitting at a Waffle House at 2 a.m. and declaring that restaurants are grimy and depressing places where fistfights randomly break out. Now, that statement would be true of the particular restaurant the person happens to be sitting in, but it's not true of all restaurants in general. In fact, there are many restaurants in this country that are quite clean and peaceful and serve high-quality food in a classy atmosphere. So in a similar way, yes, Los Angeles is filthy and disgusting. It is a miserable place, unfit for human occupation. But not every place in America is like Los Angeles. In fact, most places are not. The disgusting filthiness is really only found in Democrat-controlled metropolitan areas. Although, yes, they managed to have, in Japan, they have managed to have big cities that are not glorified trash cans with drug-addled hobos defecating on the sidewalk. So how has Japan pulled that off? That brings us to the second point. The problem with leftist goobers like Jimmy Kimmel is that they'll make these kinds of observations about places like Japan, but then exhibit no curiosity as to why Japan is like that. They simply make the observation and then move on. These people are so dim-witted and incurious that they can notice a stark, shocking difference like this, that Japan's cities are clean and safe while ours are garbage dumps, without ever stopping for even a moment to reflect on the how and the why. Or even worse, they'll notice something like this. They'll notice the what, and they'll bring it up for discussion, but then stridently condemn anyone who tries to talk about the how and the why. Now, in this case, the how and why are obvious. Obvious to anyone who isn't Jimmy Kimmel or one of his liberal friends. Japan is a homogenous country. Now, that might change. In fact, a report this week says that the Japanese government is bringing in over 800,000 foreign workers to deal with labor shortages. And those labor shortages are caused largely by the fact that Japan has the oldest population in the world with record low birth rates. In the next 50 years, the country's population is expected to decline by 30%. In the next several decades, nearly half of the population will be senior citizens, all because Japanese people refuse to have babies. So, you know, if you go to Tokyo in the not-so-distant future, it may not be the paradise that Jimmy Kimmel was so enraptured by. But putting aside Japan's slow-motion extinction for a moment, the fact is that right now, and for all of Japan's history before this, back when, you know, even back when they were still having babies, Japan is and has been a homogenous country. Nearly everyone in the country is Japanese by nationality, and the vast majority of those people are also Japanese by ethnicity. Okay, it is a country where nearly everyone shares one language, one ethnicity, one culture. And that culture is one that values discipline, hard work, education. Japanese people also have a very high average IQ. They have the highest in the world, in fact. And this is an important point because, and this is, now we get into very unforbidden territory here, but plenty of other countries are relatively homogenous, right? But their cultures are inferior to Japanese culture, and their people generally have much lower IQs. So homogeneity itself does not make an advanced, clean, safe, and orderly society. Homogeneity in a sophisticated culture with high IQ people is what does that. So you can see why Kimmel doesn't want to talk about the why. He doesn't want to talk about it because Japan has made itself so enviably clean and safe and orderly precisely by rejecting Kimmel's own worldview. So Kimmel, as an avowed leftist, believes that diversity is our strength, that we should open our arms and allow the third world to flood over our borders, that we ought to have no national language, no real culture, that we should treat all cultures the same. But Japan is Japan because it has, up to now, done the opposite of all that. And now Kimmel excoriates America for not being like Japan while insisting that we must not do any of the things Japan has done to make itself that way. And we should continue doing all of the things that make our cities dirty and disgusting, even as he complains that our cities are dirty and disgusting. Which leads to the third point. You know, there are things that we can do to make our cities cleaner and safer. You know, we're not going to get to Japan levels, probably. That toothpaste left the tube a long time ago. But we don't have to live like this. Our cities don't need to be post-apocalyptic wastelands. They can be cleaned up. It's just that Kimmel, while complaining that the cities are not cleaned up, doesn't want to do any of the necessary things to clean them up. And those things would include, first of all, shutting down illegal immigration, drastically reducing and restricting legal immigration, enforcing the laws in our cities strictly and severely, outlawing vagrancy, rounding up the mentally ill people living on the street, the ones incapable of being productive members of society, putting them in institutions, punishing drug dealers and drug consumers, taking repeat offenders, even those whose repeat offenses are relatively minor, putting them in prison with lengthy sentences, strictly enforcing the laws against vandalism, littering, loitering, okay, imposing order with force and severity. That's how you do it. Okay, there is no other way to do it. Or at least there's no other way for us to do it. The Japan option is not on the table, so we're left with doing it the ugly way. And we can clean things up the ugly way. Or we can have an ugly country. Those are the two options. There are no other options for us. Jimmy Kimmel has chosen the latter. He and his liberal friends choose to have an ugly country while complaining that the country is ugly. That's the problem. And that is why he and they are today canceled. That'll do it for the show today. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. Talk to you tomorrow. Good day. Godspeed.
Introducing two new and improved Jeremy's Razors. Fighting the left and building the future means constantly bringing your best, and that's exactly what Jeremy's Razors is doing. Choose between the new and improved Precision 5 Razor for an exceptionally smooth and close shave, or the brand new Sprint 3 Razor for a quick, clean shave. The new razors feature top-to-bottom redesign. Enjoy an ergonomic handle designed for superior durability. The new coated stainless steel blades are sharper, so they last longer. Increased flexibility allows the razor to better contour to your face to reduce nicks and cuts. Plus, the lubricating strip is now equipped with argan oil and aloe. It's time to toss out that woke razor and get yourself a Precision 5 or Sprint 3 trial kit today. Pledge to fight the left and build a future with Jeremy's Razors. Go to jeremysrazors.com and order yours today.